Good morning. Hey, when he asked me to preach a couple weeks ago, I thought, well, sure, I didn't even look at the scripture. I thought, yeah, you bet, I'd love to preach. And then I started, started looking at exactly what does he want me to preach from, what text, and it's Ecclesiastes chapter 3, the last part of the chapter, then the first part of chapter 4. And then I did wonder, Ryan, I'm like, this is a really hard passage. So I'm going to give him a break, and this is probably probably the most difficult passage I've ever had to preach from or to teach from in any way. It just really is. If you just took it at first glance and you just read it, it would be depressing. You'd walk away going, man, what is the point of life at all? And it's just really, really a challenging passage. And quite honestly, I don't spend a whole lot of time in devotional reading in Ecclesiastes. Maybe I should. Years ago, and I grew up in the church, if you guys are here, back in January, some of you were sleeping in from a New Year's Eve, and a lot of you weren't here. I had a lot of empty seats that day, but I kind of told my story. I grew up in church all my life. I don't remember a time where I wasn't in church, and so I have heard every story, I think, in the Bible. But I remember about, I don't know, it was before our kids were born, one Sunday, I thought, I will stand before God, and I would never have read his book from start to finish. That I'd never read every part of it. I'd never read Ecclesiastes in my life. And yet I'd been through seminary and been on staff at churches and leading ministry and doing things. And yet I was embarrassed to even admit that. I'm embarrassed to admit it to you that in my 30s, I still had not read the whole Bible. And yet the gospel, as Ryan shared earlier, man, the gospel's from Genesis to Revelation. It doesn't begin in Matthew. All the stories in the Old Testament, you can find the imagery, everything points to Jesus. It's all about him. And so back in, 15 years ago, I said, I'm going to read the whole Bible. And so I read it from Genesis to Revelation. So I would encourage you, even though you may not spend a lot of time in Ecclesiastes on a normal devotional time that, you find yourself there because it's so powerful. I will tell you this, that even in the midst of this passage today that we're going to look at, and by the way, I think I've got, it's only 10:17, I've got a long time this morning to preach. So I've got some time here to really dive in. But I'm going to tell you, even in the midst of a passage that looks like it's so depressing, and Solomon, the wisest guy who ever lived, would look at the world and say, man, life is harsh, and then you die. And that's the message. Okay, we're done. I mean, really, that's his message. That in the midst of going, that's what he's saying, that we could leave here this morning. When we leave out of here and you go eat lunch, I'm going straight to baseball practice. But that we leave here in just a little bit, that we not leave discouraged, but that we would leave encouraged. And that sounds crazy to say, when that's the point of the message, life is harsh, and then you die. Yeah, that's his message. But that gives us great opportunity, that in the midst of life's difficult circumstances, that we can know that God's sovereign, and he points it out in this passage, God's sovereign, that he's in control, that we can trust him. It's odd that Ryan, that you asked me to preach on this particular passage, because a few weeks ago, I found myself really actually pondering this exact thing that he's talking about. Because of the pain that I see in our world, I love to watch the news. I'm weird. This is so weird, I know, but on our DVR, I record the world news. Is that weird? Am I weird? But I can't watch it with our kids in the room because of all the junk that goes on around the world. I just like to stay up to date, but I have to watch that after they're in bed or at odd times when they're out playing, and I just watch just to see what's going on. Our world's a complete mess. And what Solomon says here in chapter 3, verse 16 through the end of the chapter, which verse 22, and then the first part of chapter 4, 1 through 6, he's saying basically the world's a mess. All I see is injustice. Injustice everywhere. People being oppressed, things not going like they should go, and life is not how it should be. And I began to think about, as I read this, that my first thought was, what is the greatest injustice that I've really ever known or ever seen? And as Ryan said, we do work in around the world. We work with orphaned and vulnerable kids. And It was about 6 years ago. I was already doing mission-type work, going overseas. We were working with church planters among unreached people groups, people who have never heard the gospel, people who don't know who Jesus is. Now, it's hard to believe where we live, but there are millions upon billions of people who don't even know who Jesus is, never heard his name, never heard his story. And so I was out doing that, loved it, but I found myself in Sierra Leone standing among a bunch of kids who were my kids' ages at the time, young kids, young boys, who had been kicked out, abandoned in the middle of the night. Their parents will leave and never see them again. And the kids go to the street, and they fend for themselves. So I find myself walking among these kids, looking at injustice. And then, through God's promise, I'll fast forward. God led us to really partner and start work there, and we took over a home full of orphans. Now, if you know any history of Sierra Leone, like some movies you may have seen in the past in Africa where the unthinkable has happened, and the unthinkable happened in Sierra Leone back in the late 90s, early 2000s, and they had rebels that rose up. They want their power, and they want it at all costs, and they come in, and they just start killing people, and they don't just shoot them. They're walking around with machetes, and they're lopping people's heads off. It's like that. It was just like that. Thousands upon thousands of people. It didn't matter if you were young. It didn't matter if you were a baby or if you were an old man. They're going to come in and kill. And so what happened was with some of our kids that are in this home, they tell the story, and they were very young at the time. But we have one little girl that has stuck out in my mind since the day I heard it. And she told me her story that one day the rebels were coming. She can remember as a five-year-old little girl coming into their particular village. They had heard about all that was going on there. They knew the rebels were coming, and they ran into their home. They locked the door. It's a very primitive home. All the homes there are just extreme poverty. Run in. Their whole family gathers into their house and lock the door. The rebels come. They're beating the door down. They've got machetes. They've got AK-47s, and they're going to kill them. And they have a window in the back that has bars on it, and she was the only one small enough that they could let out the back window. They let her out the back window. And she runs. She runs. The rebels don't see her by God's grace. And she turns around and watches them set her house on fire. As the screams come out from inside and they can't get out. And her family burns to death. It's a five-year-old little girl to watch that. And I think of injustice when I heard that story. And even right now, it fires me up. It makes me so angry. Why, God, why do you allow this kind of stuff to go on? No one ever caught those rebels. They went on. In fact, there's one in that village today. There's a general that was in the rebel army that still walks around. Everybody knows who he is. He's gone crazy now. He's insane, but he's still there, and there was no justice. In fact, today, if you go to Sierra Leone, it's not uncommon to see people walking around with missing arms or missing legs, and it's just because of the brutality, the injustice that was put upon these people. And so as I look at this passage of Scripture in Solomon, we're going to read it in just a minute, but he calls out and says, man, all I see are injustices. That's all I see. Life is harsh. Life is so difficult. And then you die. Then in some ways, if I'm living in Sierra Leone, I could relate so much to this, much more than I can now. Living in the elegance and the luxurious United States of America, in Collin County, one of the most wealthiest country counties in all of the land here. It's hard for me to relate, but as I look and I see what Solomon says here, I also can say, yeah, there's so many injustices, things that don't make sense, things that shouldn't be as they are. As you know, many of you I know really well, some of you I don't know at all, but we adopted a little girl, Brinley, and you've seen her from Ethiopia. It'll be five years, April 1st, in a couple weeks. And as I think about what's going on in our country, of the injustices and the discrimination and the prejudice and the racial divide in our country, It fires me up to think that our little girl, because of the color of her skin, because of the color of her skin, that she would be discriminated against, that she would have injustice in her life just because of the way she looks. And yet that's all around us. Guys, let me tell you before we even get into this, as believers in Jesus Christ, as people who have been changed because of the blood of what he did for us, of shedding his blood for us, we ought to be on the forefront of that, of dispelling all that. And say, we're all equal before God. We're all loved before him. He created us equal. And to think about prejudice that would ever happen to any of us because of the color of our skin or because of the way we talk or because of the way we look or where we're from, it's ridiculous. It's insane that we have to deal with this in this modern time, even where we live in Melissa, Texas. And so as Solomon says, I see injustice everywhere. Guys, it may not be as bad in here as it is in Sierra Leone, but I see injustice everywhere we look. I see things that shouldn't be. I see people who get cancer that shouldn't be. And I think, God, why do you not answer these prayers praying for this young lady who had cancer? Why would you not heal her? God, why would you not heal this person? Why does the bad thing happen to such a good family? And something so good happen to someone who's so immoral and so bad? And so I can relate, and I think all of us can, right? You're shaking your head. You can relate to the injustices that we see around us and just in life, that life is harsh. Life is harsh. So let's look there. Finally, I'll get to the passage in Ecclesiastes chapter 3, verse 16. And let's read there. Moreover, I saw under the sun that in the place of justice, even there was wickedness. And in the place of righteousness, even there was wickedness. He's talking primarily, probably about the court system. I said in my heart, God will judge the righteous and the wicked, for there is a time for every matter and for every work. I said in my heart, with regard to children of man, that God is testing them, that they may see themselves are but beasts or animals. For what happens to the children of man, what happens to the beast is the same. As one dies, so dies the other. They all have the same breath, and man has no advantage over the beast, for all is vanity. And that's a pretty familiar statement, isn't it, from Solomon? All is vanity. It's all chasing after the wind. The guy's the smartest guy that ever lived outside of Christ. He's like, man, we're all going to die chasing after anything. It's just all vanity. All go to one place, all from dust, and to dust all return. Who knows whether the spirit of man goes upward and the spirit of the beast goes down into the earth? So I saw that there is nothing better than a man should rejoice in his work, for that is his lot. Who can bring him to see what will be after him? And so as we look here, we see this is the theme. Life is harsh, and then you die. And I think he tells us, I think the point really of all this, besides that, hey, you're going to die. I mean, you're going to live. It's going to be hard. You're going to die. But I think that life's injustices should break us and then shape us to humility. Okay, verse 16, let's look there. Just one thing, can I add this real quick? I love this, Ryan, about this church, is that we don't pick and choose what to preach on. We preach from the Bible, verse by verse. We're saying, man, we're not going to avoid Scripture. And even though the text might be difficult, we're not going to avoid it. And it might be hard, might not get as much out of it as we would in some other passage, but we're going to read it verse by verse. And I think the most important thing is, how do we apply this to our life? Okay, so verse 16, he says, moreover, I saw under the sun that in the place of justice, even there was wickedness. And in the place of righteousness, even there was wickedness. And I think this, moreover, some of your versions may say, therefore. It's connecting to what Ryan preached last week. I believe you preached this last week, where he's talking about, you know, there's a time for this, there's a time for that, there's a time to weep, a time to laugh, a time to mourn. My wife would love this, a time to dance. She loves to dance. He's going through all this. He's got a real light tone, and he talks about God is great, he's sovereign. Verse 11, he says, he's made everything beautiful in its time. Also, he's put eternity in a man's heart, yet so he cannot find out what God has done from the beginning to the end. And so he's going along here. It's just, you know, no big deal. And then it's like all of a sudden in verse 16, it's almost like he put his pen down and walked away and then saw a bunch of injustice that was going on and was reminded, oh, this world is no good. This world is hard, and I'm tired of this. And like he sits back down, he starts writing again. So it takes a drastic turn in verse 16 of just saying, man, life is tough. This is a really hard truth, but life is harsh, and sometimes bad things happen to people. when we feel like they shouldn't. When you've ever prayed a prayer and asked God to save someone, to pray and ask and say, God, would you heal somebody? A couple weeks ago, many of you, if you're on social media, you're on the Facebooks and the whatever, you probably saw, and many of you know, Amanda Maxwell, a friend of a lot of ours. Aaron is a friend of mine. I played softball with him. But his wife, they have two kids. And after a long journey, Jennifer Pickett walked with them through that, was there when she passed. And three bouts with cancer as a child, 5 years old, I think. And then two more times, and the third time finally got her. And I think as that, like many of you had prayed for her and just said, God, would you please just rescue her from that disease? God, would you do something? This is an injustice to them. And to see that he just didn't answer the prayer. He didn't answer it like we wanted to. She's healed now and in heaven. But to think about her life and to go, God, why couldn't that happen to all these kids, all these families who don't love you at all, have no regard for you, who maybe even an atheist, people who have no regard for you. But God, she was a godly woman from start to finish, man, from the beginning of cancer till the day she died. She lived for you. God, why would you do that to pray and say, God, why? It seems like, from our perspective as a man, just living in a fleshly perspective, God, why do this kind of stuff happen? That it's just an injustice. Not that someone did anything wrong, but it's an injustice that a young lady, that two kids are going to have to grow up without their mom. We could all give examples, couldn't we? I mean, I could look back at my life and think, man, I could share I could take a lot of time. I got plenty of time here of a lot of things that have happened to me, of injustices that have happened to me, and go, man, the world is messed up. And it was just a few weeks ago, Ryan, that before you asked me to preach this, I was thinking, I remember sitting vividly on my couch thinking about this, about my children. My kids are 6, 9, and one's about to turn 12 here in next week, thinking, man, this world is so messed up. It's just messed up. And I wish I could protect my kids from the injustices that this world provides. So freely, just freely gives. Just so freely gives. Whether it be relationship problems, people who do you wrong. You ever been done wrong by somebody? You did everything right, but they did you wrong. Is anybody like that? It's happened to me where I feel like, man, I've done the right thing. I've done the right thing through it. I've held up my character, my honor. I've done the right thing. Yet they have chosen to do wrong to me. And to think about all the injustice. I don't want that to happen to my kids. But the reality is, Solomon's exactly right. As he looks around, he says, man, I saw under the sun that it's all injustice everywhere you look. Everywhere you look, and bad things happen to everybody. It rains on everybody, doesn't it? It rains on the good, it rains on the bad. But sometimes it is most difficult for me to watch good people who are godly people be done wrong. Verse 17, more or less, it points back to verses 1 through 15, but verse 17 says, I said in my heart, God will judge the righteous and the wicked, for there is a time for every matter and for every work. And I think this points back to the sovereignty of God. Now, some of us go, well, God's sovereign. But I think you really get a grasp, and it's a whole message in itself, of what the sovereignty of God really is. I know Ryan's talked about this off and on many times, because you can't without reading. I mean, you're going to read the word, you're going to see God's sovereignty. But God's in control. Not loosely, not way back from a distance, like what's your name sing about from a distance. What, who is that singing that? Anyway, Bette Midler, was that it? That's not God. God's in control. So when bad things happen to you, injustices are done to you, when young ladies like Amanda Maxwell pass away, it's not as if God's not watching. It's not like he's over here doing something else and is busy doing something else, like he's not paying attention. God is sovereign. He is in control, weaving everything in his plan. We don't always understand it, but we can trust in him that he's in control, right? He's in control of your life. There's no accidents with him, which means I live where I live, not because Kent and Tammy chose that place, but I believe this, God put us there. He put us there. He caused things to happen for us to be there. He caused the injustices in my life. I could tell two or three stories for that to happen for a reason, probably to grow me, more than likely. But here's the thing. As Solomon, back to this passage, Solomon says, hey, everybody's going to be judged, so whether it's in this life or the next, so you see an injustice being done, you think somebody's getting off and they're not being held accountable for that. somebody's done you wrong in the past, and you're like, man, I can't stand it. Boy, you got away with that. You know, I did the right thing. Psalmist says, hey, in the end, God's going to take care of that. You don't have to worry about a thing. It's God's in complete control, all right? He's in control. He'll be the one that'll judge, whether it's in this life or it's in the next, all right? Verse 18 through 20. Let's read there. He kind of puts his eyes back to the earth on this one, takes it off of God, and he comes back. He says, I said in my heart with regard to the children of man that God is testing them that they may see that they themselves are but beasts. But beasts. It's kind of an interesting term there. Animals. For what happens to the children of man and what happens to the beast is the same. As one dies, so dies the other. They all have the same breath, and man has no advantage over the beast, for all is vanity. All go to one place, all are from dust, and to dust all return. And if you read that, that is depressing, because what he's saying is, we're just like animals. You're going to die. You're going to live. For many animals, most animals, I would say in the wild, it's a struggle. We have raccoons and possums that come up to our house every night. They're looking for food. Man, they struggle. And he's saying, you're no different than them. You're no different than a possum, basically. You're no different than them. You're going to live your life, and at some point, you're going to die. And that's it. And it's going to be hard. That's going to be the struggle. You know, I remember I grew up in a home where I don't remember a time we didn't have guns. We had a gun cabinet. My dad was into hunting, and we used to go shoot birds and all that. But it wasn't until I was about 16. I went deer hunting. My parents divorced when I was 13, and I had never really been deer hunting. Although my dad was into it, I just never went. He didn't really ever press me to do it. I'd love to go quail hunting or whatever. I never thought much about a rabbit hunt, shoot a bird. I didn't ever eat it. That's the problem, right? Somebody else would, but I like the sport of it. But my stepdad, when my mom and stepdad got married, he was so into deer hunting. He said, you got to go. You got to go. And, of course, you know, I didn't have really a whole lot of choice at that age. My mom said, you're going to go. He wants you to go. Okay, so I went. And we're out in Jacksboro, out in a little, you know, northwest of Fort Worth out there. And we get up at like 4 in the morning. It's still dark outside. He drops me off and said, the stand's about 200 yards that way. And it's complete, I mean, it's pitch black. I have no idea where I'm going. So I walk along, and I just give up. I lay down in some brush, and I look down, and there's an owl looking over me going, woo, woo, like that. I still remember that. It scared me to death. So I wait about 30 minutes, it gets light, get in the stand, and then that day I shot my first deer. And I walked up after I shot him. I thought, oh, yes, shot him. I walk up, and that thing is struggling for breath. Now, some of you men in here don't think I'm so weak. Okay, I'm not weak. I'm just sensitive. I'm in touch with my sensitive side. I walk up, and I still remember right now that was not a good feeling to watch that deer just struggle for breath, and I had to end its life just like that. I remember thinking, I just took its life just like that. It's gone. He was living, and then he's gone just like that. And it made a mark on me. It really did. So that don't ask me to ever go deer hunting with you because I'm not going to do it. Okay? To this day, I enjoy shooting and all that, but I'm not into hunting. But I remember that day as almost a marker for me that life, it can be taken just like that. I was 16, but for the first time, it really hit me. Man, life, it's gone like that in an instant. And that's what Solomon's saying here in this passage, is that we're no different than any animal that you would ever see on the earth. You're going to live for a time, and you're going to die, and life is fragile. Life is short. It can be taken from you in an instant. It can be taken you from in an instant. Verse 21 says this, who knows whether the spirit of man goes upward and the spirit of the beast goes down to the earth? Who knows whether the spirit of man goes upward and the spirit of the beast goes down to the earth? And I'll be honest with you. I read that. I read it like that twice and then maybe three or four times ago. I don't know what he's saying. And you know what, to this day, I'm standing here before you, I'm not sure exactly what he means when he said that. And I've read some on this, too, as well. I think that the best conclusion I could come up with, some scholars who'd written about it, is that most of us, and I think this is true for us as we're younger, most of us behave as if we have endless time. And I think this is true, especially when you're young. You just don't think about dying. We were privileged this week to go. We had a friend who gifted most of our trip to go skiing. It was just an amazing gift. And we got to go skiing up in Colorado in the mountains. I loved it. I had a great time. And I remember I grew up going skiing. My dad would take us skiing. Mom and dad would. So I grew up going every year, went to every resort probably you've heard of. I was privileged and honored to get to do that. It was just amazing. But I remember doing all the tricks and jumping and all that. But I watched these kids on snowboards doing tricks, and I thought, man, I used to do stuff like that. I used to do that with the best of them, son. But not anymore. I'm getting old, and I might break something. He said, well, you never fall at all. I said, it's because I don't take chances. I'm not an idiot. I know my limitations. So we go to dinner that night. We're eating pizza, and on the screen is all these snowboarders and all their tricks, and it also shows the outtakes of them crashing and breaking things, no doubt. And I'm thinking, these guys are complete idiots. Look at them, just complete idiots. They live like they're not going to get hurt, but yet, man, they fall and they bust it so hard, bust their head. Well, you know they're going to the hospital. But I remember being that age thinking, man, I don't think about death. I don't think about it. But as the older I get, the closer I get to, you know, I don't know, I'm 46. So for some of you, that's ancient, and some of you, that's getting young. But I'm telling you, it ain't young to nobody anymore. I used to be a young man, and like 46 is not young. I don't ever get told young man anymore because I'm getting old. I got so much gray hair, losing hair up here. I noticed this weekend while we were skiing, like, man, it's thinning out. I'm getting old. But what I think this is saying, this passage here is saying, is that most of us, we don't live our lives as if, hey, there's an end to it. And I think it's James that says, you know, our life is but a vapor. It's just a mist. It's here and it's gone. And we make our plans that we're going to do this day and this next week we're going to do this. We're making plans for the future. We're making plans for next year we'll go here on vacation. Or I mean, in 5 years I'd like to be here. We don't think about death. And what Solomon, I think, is saying here, and based on my reading of other folks who looked into this, is that it really is a call for us to realize our mortality, that really there is an end that's coming to our life, okay? Verse 22, and I'll move on. Chapter 4 is where I really want to stick. Verse 22, so I saw there's nothing better than a man who should rejoice in his work, for that is his lot. Who can bring to him to see what will be after him? Who can? God can. So he's saying, in the midst of all this, life is harsh. Oh my gosh, is it hard. And then you die. Oh, but you should be happy in your work. And Ryan, I wasn't here last week, but I believe he talked about that. I think in verse 13 it talks about that we should be happy in our work. He's saying, hey, God's given you a lot of good gifts. Life's hard. Enjoy him. Do work. Do the work that God's given you. And enjoy it. Enjoy your life. And it's hard to do. It's kind of a weird ending statement in chapter 3. I want to move to chapter 4, okay? I did not read this, so let's read this, and I'll move quickly for time's sake. It says, again, I saw all the oppressions that are done under the sun, and behold, the tears of the oppressed, and they had no one to comfort them. On the side of their oppressors, there was power, and there was no one to comfort them. And I thought the dead who are already dead, more fortunate than the living who are still alive. Are you listening? You hear what Solomon's saying? Saying it's better to be dead than alive. But better than both is he who has not yet been and has not seen the evil deeds that are done under the sun. It's better to have not been born is what he's saying. And that is shocking. This is coming from the smartest man who ever lived outside of Jesus. Verse 4, then I saw that all the toil and all skill and work come from a man's envy of his neighbor. This is also vanity in striving after the wind. The fool folds his hands and eats his own flesh. Tasty. Better is a handful of quietness than two hands full of toil and striving after the wind. Guys, I'm going to, just for time's sake, let's just run through this. I don't think in this, and from what I read and studied on this, more than likely, almost every scholar will agree on this, that he's using extreme exaggeration. It's hyperbole. It's all hyperbole. Just extreme exaggeration. But what I do see here and what I love about this and what actually this is Ryan, and when I actually got into this, I'm like, well, I like what I see here because this speaks to me. I love his passion of what he sees. He sees oppression everywhere and he's ticked off about it. He doesn't like it. He says, I see people crying. There's no one to dry their tears. And so for some of us, we read that and we go, oh man, that's just bad. I see and I hear about these things in Sierra Leone. I hear about the things in Kenya, or I hear about things that are on the news. But man, I am happy and comfortable in my life and I'm good. I hate that there's oppression. Oh, injustice everywhere you look. Man, this world's tough. Man, what are we going to eat for dinner? That's our attitude most of the time, if we're honest. That we see what Solomon sees, the injustice that goes on around us. We see the discrimination. We see the things that shouldn't be in our world. But we take a back seat. We take a back seat and say, well, it's just the way it is. And what I think God's called us to do as believers who've been changed by Him, people who know Christ and have been transformed by Him, didn't just pray some prayer to get out of hell, but people who have been changed by Him is people who say, I'm going to get in the game. I'm going to be active in this. And I think that's what Solomon's call here is. I think this is what the use of extreme exaggeration is to call us as believers to action. Are you hearing me? Some of you have fallen asleep? He's calling us to action. Not to sit back and do nothing, but to actually do something. One time when I felt extreme, I couldn't do anything. I wished I could have. I was privileged to go to Cambodia, and I was on the border of Cambodia and Thailand. I watched hundreds of people being trafficked right before my eyes. The missionary friend of mine was there, and I said, what can we do? He said, nothing. If you try and stop them, you will be in so much trouble, it will not work well for you. I promise you, don't step in, don't do anything. And they had gone out in these extreme villages, told these kids that they would have the promise of more funds that would come if they would go work in Thailand. Sorry, Chris, not yet, I'm sorry. Throwing you off here. I just looked at you because you look so pretty. So they gave the promise to these folks in Thailand, these kids, these teenagers. Hey, you can go to Thailand and work, and you can send money back to your family, and you can come and go as you freely want. It was a complete lie. It was a complete lie. Those kids, most of them, hundreds, will never see their family again being trafficked. Now, as a believer in Christ and as just a human being, I see the oppression of those kids, and I went, man, I want to do something. How can we do something and be engaged? But far too often, we sit back and we hear someone like Ryan come up and preach and say, man, there's opportunity for us to be salt and light to the world. And we sit back and say, no, I'm comfortable. I'm fine where I am. Don't push me to do anything more. Don't make me uncomfortable in church. Don't ask me to do something that I don't want to do. Yet that is God's call for each one of us as believers. He says this, you are the salt of the earth. The salt of the earth. Anybody like food without salt? No, it stinks, doesn't it? It ain't no good. But you add a little salt to it? It's not good for your blood pressure, but boy, it makes it taste good. This week we're at a restaurant. We got the chips, you know, and our middle son, Braden, he loves to put salt on it. And he'll get that, you eat those chips out there, and he just turned that salt shaker over. And you start looking around, doing that. Doing that right there, a little bit more. And you got so much salt, you need to add some chips to the salt. I mean, it's that bad. But that's the reality of what salt does. It brings flavor to the food, doesn't it? Jesus said, you're the salt of the earth. You are the salt of the earth. He also said in that same passage in Matthew, you are the light of the world. City on a hill cannot be hidden. Don't hide the light that God's put in you. God's called you here for a purpose. He put you in the neighborhood where you live to be a light right there in that neighborhood. Somebody said, well, there's so many Christians around, Melissa. Give me a break. I would say, I don't know what the percentage is. 90% of people are not in church on Sunday. So they're right now at home doing whatever. Many of them probably have never encountered a real Jesus, a real transforming power in a relationship with Him. And you know what? God puts you in that house where you're at to be a light to them, to open your mouth to share the gospel with them, to be the light of the world in Melissa, Texas. That's what He's called you to do. I believe this too, that every believer, right? We've not talked about this, but I know you feel the same way. Every believer, all of us, should have a passport. Jesus said, go and make disciples of all nations. The world is being oppressed. We got to take the gospel to the nations. You've got an opportunity to go to Kenya. Some of you say, man, that's for somebody else. That's not my deal. And I'm going, what Bible are you reading? Make disciples of all nations. And I realize it may not be your time. It may not be a good time in your season of life. But at some point, we keep pushing that out in the future, out in the future, out in the future. And you've never gone. My goodness. Jesus has changed your life, has he not? Has he changed your life? Then get busy being a light in the world, not just in your hometown. Be a light where he puts you and say, God, here I am. Send me. What do you want to do with my life? Here I am. I'm the salt of the earth, God, because you've done this within me. Send me out. Let me be a light for the world. Let me turn those who are oppressed and the injustice that I see. Don't let me sit back and just go, oh, though, look at the terrible world. You're doing great work over there. Keep doing it. Get in the game. There was a guy, evangelist out in West Texas, John Randalls. You may have heard of John Randalls. He passed away, I think, last year. But he used to speak to lots of teams and sports teams. And he always says this in you know, his coaching vernacular. He always say, put me in, Coach Jesus. Put me in, Coach Jesus. Put me in the game. Far too long, many of us, possibly in this room, we sit on the sidelines, we sit in the stands, and we watch other people who we think maybe are more qualified or more got the more of a calling on their life, and they're the ones out sharing the gospel with people. They're the ones who are going out and being a light. And we sit back and say, no, I'm just not that gifted. I'm quiet. Man, has Jesus changed your life? The grace and mercy of God, has it changed your life? Then it's your privilege, it's your honor to make much of him wherever you are. Our daughter asked us recently, she's done this a few times, where she, it's just a funny question, but she said to me the other day, she said, Dad, I sit in my bed sometimes and I think, why am I here? Why am I here? She's six. And I said, you ask yourself that question? Really? And I said, you don't know the answer. She goes, maybe I know, but I just wonder why. Like, why am I here? Why was I made? And I immediately said to her, I said, you're here to make much of Jesus. You're here to make much of Jesus. That's why you're here. It's no accident. Solomon said it. God's sovereign. He did not make a mistake with any of us. He didn't make some mistake putting you where you live. Putting you, student, in that classroom, in that science class, sitting next to that young lady or that young man, he put you there for a reason, and it's to make much of him, right? That's why we're here. And although this world may stink, and it does, we're called to be a light in it. We're called to be that. And in the midst of storms that come, I've often heard this, you're either in the middle of a storm, going into a storm or coming out of a storm. That's just the fact of life, and that's what I was thinking about with my kids. How could I prevent them from having all the pain that this life offers, that life is harsh and then you die? I don't want that for them. I don't want any of those things, but that they would see Jesus in the midst of it, that he is worth following, and that because he lives, I can face tomorrow. I grew up singing that hymn in church. We don't sing it as much anymore. By the way, the worship was amazing this morning. It's amazing this morning, as it always is, but this morning especially. But it makes me think back to those days sitting back in a very traditional church and thinking through all the junk that went on in my family, of just asking God, why does this stuff happen to me and my family, injustice that I saw with my parents and with pain, the abuse that took place in my life. Then, God, where are you? And to know, and we would sing that song, because he lives, I can face tomorrow. Y'all remember that song, the hymn? Anybody remember that? Because he lives, I can face tomorrow. Because he lives, all fear is gone. Because I know he holds the future, life is worth living. Just because he lives. And so I would agree with Solomon and say, man, everywhere I look around the world, watch the news, I see injustice. I see things that just do not make sense. From a fleshly level, looking out and going, God, why does this stuff happen? Why do good people have to suffer and go through such difficult things? I don't understand any of it, but I trust in his sovereignty that he knows. And because I met Jesus back years ago, 40 years ago I met him. that because he lives in me, because he lives in you, we can face tomorrow. We can face it, trusting him that God, no matter what this life brings, no matter how hard it is, no matter how hard it is, you walk with us through it. And then we die, as Solomon says. But let me add this. Then we get to see him. We get to see Jesus. And that day's coming quickly, isn't it? We don't know how quick. Some of us may not make it out of this year, honestly. And so the time is now. You live for him. To be the salt of the earth. To be the light of the world. Guys, there are people moving into this town almost on a daily basis. People who have no clue who Jesus is or what it would mean to have a relationship with him that would completely change their life. And he's called you to live right where you are, to spread his love, to spread his hope, to spread meaning and purpose in life. You're right there. There's also all kinds of opportunity around the world to say, God, you put me on this planet for a reason. God, put me in the game. Use me however it is you want. Help me to go to the oppressed, to go to those who are being beaten down, those who are less fortunate than me, and use me to be a light to them, to be a light to the world. This morning, I've talked a lot about this, about the gospel. I'm wrapping up. I know I'm shutting my Bible and everything, but listen, I would be completely naive. I think this would be true. I think you would say this. Many of you would say this, that all of us in this room know Christ, that we've been changed by him. Many of us have prayed a prayer to come to faith. But my question for you, like it would be just about any time I get up and speak, is do you know him? I mean, do you know him? Do you know him? Because the Jesus that I met as a little boy, 40 years later, it's because he lives within me that life is worth living, that he gives me hope and he gives me purpose. And in the midst of uncertainty and things that don't make sense, I know he said, I'll never leave you, Kent. I'll never leave you. And so do you know him? Ryan, I know that we've not talked about this as well, but I'm fairly new here. We've been coming here several months. And I know he also often says this. We're always in such a hurry to get out of here, it seems. We often say, well, there will be elders spread out around the room. Ryan, would it be okay if the elders would just stand just so for me to even know? These are the people that he's talking about when he says that you can pray with them. Thank you, guys. Appreciate you so much. These are godly men who could lead you and say, man, if you've got an issue in your life and you're struggling with the injustice of what you've seen or abuse or something, some struggle in your life, these men are here to pray with you. If you don't know Jesus, the one that I'm talking about, that he's changed, never changed your life, they could lead you to that person of Jesus and begin a meaningful, life-transforming relationship with the God who made you. Man, it's incredible, isn't it? Those of us who know him, I'm not bragging, I'm just saying, he's that good, isn't he? You need to know him. So we're not trying to embarrass you at all, but come up after the service and say, man, I just want to know Jesus. Well, I need you. Would you just pray for me? I'm not trying to embarrass anybody, but just to offer that to you. He's worth it. And because he lives, man, life's worth living, isn't he? I mean, isn't it? Life is worth living. All because he lives. And he can live within you. All right, let's pray. Father, thank you for a passage in the Old Testament that quite honestly is so difficult to read. It can be depressing, but thank you, God, that the application for us is, although the world is a mess and it is so harsh so many times, that you're sovereign, that you're in control, and that it is a call to humility for us and a call to action for us as believers, that we would be a light to the world, as you said we are, and we would be the salt of the earth, God. Father, you're sovereign, you're in control, you have us here for a purpose, and it's to make much of you, to glorify you and enjoy you forever. And so, God, I pray each person this morning, here this morning, God, that each of us, God, would experience you and know you, and you transform our lives. And God, not that we would just live our lives and say, yeah, life is harsh, and then we die, but God, that we would say, life is harsh, but Jesus is our hope. Jesus, you're our hope. You're the hope of the world. Help us, God, not to sit on the sidelines, but to get in the game and to offer you ourselves, offer to you, God, our complete self, who we are, a living sacrifice for you to do is whatever you want, God. God, we love you. We thank you so much for your grace, giving us a gift we never deserved, for your mercy, withholding your wrath, putting it on your Son. Because of that, we're benefactors of that. So, God, we're so grateful for that this morning. We're reminded of your great love. God, may we be a light to a lost world and to a messed up world. We love you and we praise you in Jesus' name. Amen.
Thanks for listening to the Parks Church Melissa podcast. We meet Sundays at Melissa Middle School at 10:30 a.m. and we look forward to seeing you there soon. The Parks Church, for the city, about a person.